Log Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard about someone who is passionate about living the life you love? Would you like to learn more about what it's like to date when you're a famous celebrity? Have you ever wanted to know about being both raw and delicious at the same time? Tell me, can you imagine what it's like being a personal strategist? Do you know what it's like to dump his ass? That's right. Dump his ass. Use those Mr. Wrongs to lead you straight to Mr. Right. And when was the last time you heard about a strategic guide for the stars? Now, we're talking about the stars in Hollywood, not the stars in heaven. Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. She has been on the show before, and she is a success coach extraordinaire. She will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.6 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. To say she is passionate about living the life you love is without question an understatement. With a personal story, she has a perspective to navigating life. She's a trauma survivor who used her own instincts to transform virtually others, but she couldn't transform herself. Sought out by high-profile clientele that extend from the west coast of California, her celebrity clients, she excels at finding the deepest hidden causes for glitches in life and love so you get immediate results and rid of any baggage. She has appeared on countless radio shows and TV networks. She's a member of the Screen Actors Guild who still loves to act theatrically. And her newest book, How to Date When You're Famous, just came out. I'm pleased to welcome back to our show the wonderful Charlie Emery. Hi, Charlie. How are you doing today?
Hey, January. I'm fantastic. It's so great to be here with you tonight.
Oh, I've been looking forward to having you back on the show. You certainly have been a busy, busy gal since the last time we had you on the show. Tell us what you've been up to lately.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, my brand new book, How to Date When You're Famous, A Strategic Guide for the Stars, just came out today. It's available on Kindle, and I'm really excited about it.
Oh,
wonderful.
It was
inspired by some of my celebrity clients that came to me. And, you know, they come to me for a lot of different things. But in particular, I kind of got excited about just this love advice that I was giving and the dating. I thought, nobody's written about this. I could do a really great manual based on all the stuff that I'm always working on with them and say, okay, here's some of the basic, the most common things, you know, that get in the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that happens no matter whether you're a celebrity or just a regular personality. Tell us a little bit before we talk about both of your wonderful, wonderful books, what it was like for you growing up and some of the things that were problems for you on your road to success.
You know, that's probably what surprises people the most, because they always see me smiling and they kind of think, oh, her life has just been a charm, you know. And most people are shocked when they discover that by age 19, I had endured 2 incidences of rape and battled an eating disorder, which I was still in the process of. And I went on to repress those traumas for another 7 years. And that came after already enduring a tremendous amount of prejudice, because when I grew up, we were the only multiracial family in town. I was born right in the city of Boston, and we had our issues there. And then we moved out into the suburbs, and, you know, that's where I ended up spending all of my school years. But in the beginning, it was pretty rough, and people wanted us to know that we were not welcome.
Oh, really?
So we had things like, you know, our car, I'll never forget coming out and, you know, having a car spray painted with racial slurs on it, and then your dad has to drive you to school in that, and because it's too early to go to a hardware store back then. You know, they didn't have hardware stores open at 7 in the morning. That was on the East Coast back in the early 70s, you know. So if something like that happened, you had to grin and bear it. So those were some tough, tough memories.
So when you were, how old were you when you realized that your parents' interracial marriage was different from most people that you were around?
I would say I was a toddler, because as a child, I was highly intuitive. And, you know, children have that sense anyway. And one of the things that would happen is that, you know, my mom was the one who was darker skin and my dad is German and Swedish. So what would happen is when I was out with my mom in the baby carriage, I would feel the negativity sometimes coming from people. At that time, it was coming from people of color, where they would look and say, well, you know, this child is clearly the child of, you know, a Caucasian man. And they would say things to my mom about what I didn't look like. And so I started picking up on that as a child in the city of Boston. So it was something that I can't remember a time when I didn't see it.
Now, what was it like when you went to school? What did your parents tell you? How did they explain their interracial relationship to you as a young child?
Well, you know, the best part about my parents is they never focused on that. They knew that we endured a lot, but what was fantastic is they always said, you know, the bottom line is, there's always going to be a reason why someone may choose to pick on you. And it could be because of how tall you are or how short they think you are or because you're wearing glasses or because they think you're overweight. So they really minimize that. I think that was probably the biggest gift they gave us. They didn't want us to be angry and bitter. And they knew that there was no reason for us to be, because the reality is people go through similar things for all kinds of different reasons. And so they just said, don't look for it, but when it happens, don't take it on like it's, you know, it's your burden to carry for the rest of your life, because if it's not this, it could have been something completely different, even if this was not your reality, that, you know, you're the child of an interracial marriage. And that's what people are looking at.
How about your extended family? Were they understanding, your mother's brothers and sisters, cousins, and different relatives from both sides of the family? Were they supportive?
No, not really.
No.
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is I barely had any extended family. I had one uncle who kind of came in and out a little bit, and he was cool. I mean, he didn't have any issue with race or anything like that. He just kind of had his own life and, you know, was kind of on his own path. I had one grandparent, which was my mom's mother, was my grandmother, and she was just amazing and wonderful. But the rest of the family on her side did not like the fact that my mother had married my father. So they projected stuff onto us, like we thought we were better and we were snobby and all that kind of stuff. So it's really funny to see all the different things that people make up based on their own issues. And that was one thing that as a child I did see. So it was like that whole side of the family was gone except for my grandmother, and then every so often my uncle coming through. And then on my dad's side, they disowned him.
Oh, really?
Found out he was with me. Oh, yes. Before he even married my mother, they said, you're literally dead to us. And that was it. Never, never met them. They would never have anything to do with us. And basically, it was many, many years later. In fact, it was just about 3 years ago that I met my dad's older brother, who had, you know, he had been gone when my dad was growing up because he was a lot older, and I got to meet him for the first time because he, of course, didn't harbor any of those feelings, and he didn't know where my dad was. So that was kind of a neat thing to reconnect and meet him in Santa Fe and sit down and have a margarita together, you know?
Long, long overdue. Tell me, how did your parents meet each other?
They met at a party, like a very small gathering at somebody's house. And my mom says that she called over that night, and it was a place where she used to hang out, you know, just friends. And she said, oh, who's over there tonight? And they went down the list, and they said, oh, and there's this guy here named Andy. And my mom said she got this weird feeling when she heard Andy. And so she had to go check him out, you know. And my dad was a musician. He used to teach at Berklee College of Music. He's a pretty awesome guy. And so he told her that night, you're going to marry, I'm going to marry you. And my mom
said,
crazy. And here they are, you know, over 40 years later. They're still, like, really, really close. So it's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. So that was definitely love at first sight. I love hearing stories like that. What came first, now this eating disorder or the two incidents of rape?
Well, the eating disorder started because I was studying classical ballet. I studied classical ballet, jazz, modern, and tap from the time I was about 4 or 5 years old. And when I got to puberty, you know, started to hit puberty, that's when my body kind of changed a little bit. And they always loved me because I was petite, but I had the really long arms and long legs, which is perfect for a dancer. But I'm also have more of an athletic build. And so that, you know, they really like you to have that kind of skinny as a rail, especially back then in Massachusetts. You know, the whole Boston ballet scene was very, very strict about how you looked. And so as soon as my body started to change, I really didn't look at it initially as an eating disorder because I was so, I was always wanting to be, you know, that perfect student and do everything right. Because, you know, when you're growing up and people are prejudiced and stuff, you feel like you kind of already have a mark against you. So you think, okay, I got to do everything else right so they don't think, you know, they don't see this crack here, that there's something wrong with me. So with my teacher, you know, back then it was just normal. I mean, she used to slap me in class and say, you're getting fat, what are you eating? And of course, thinking, oh, yeah, this is hardcore. I mean, when you're studying to possibly be a prima ballerina, there is absolutely no slack. It's not like your average dance school where everybody says, oh, you know, it doesn't matter if she points her toe. Like everything needed to be. And she was my instructor was a former Russian prima ballerina. And so I just started doing all these things trying to manipulate my body because I would panic, and I would panic if I so much as ate, you know, a little fun-sized candy bar. It was like, it was tough. And once I stopped dancing, that's when it really became a problem because, of course, then my weight started going up because I went from doing 6 to 7 day a week rehearsal times to after a knee injury, which, you know, probably came from being a little malnourished at that time and working my body too hard. And so I stopped dancing when I was about 16 and a half, and all of a sudden my weight started going up, and it was just, it was a battle.
Oh, my gosh. You know, that's interesting that the injury is what had you stop your career. Some things like that are so unexpected, and yet your whole life changes. You know, Charlie, we're going to take a break and hear about your host. And when we come back, I want to talk some more about your eating disorder and how you dealt with the rape situation. We'll be right back with Charlie Emery.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems. People who have fearlessly shared their story. People who have priceless personalities. I've been fortunate to host a talk show, and it's been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. They've shared their stories, their struggles, their secrets, and their successes. In my new ebook, we're talking about people dealing with incest, molestation, runaway kids, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, scandals, and starting over. Then they're my guests dealing with